Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Dylan DeMello, hanging around. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend, and hopefully never an Airport Lounge unrestricted free agent, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
It's going good. It's been an eventful couple weeks, to say the least. Before we move on to talk about the Jets, I'd like to share some sad news very briefly. Last week, a great friend and supporter of this podcast, my mom, passed away very unexpectedly but peacefully. She was a big Jets fan, and she loved Dustin Byfuglien, Paul Maurice's ties, and Matty Perreault. She supported this podcast and would have wanted us to continue, so we're going to give it a try and maybe have some fun in her honor. Mike, I know she loved you dearly, and she really enjoys this podcast, and so let's soldier on.
Yes, and it was very sad news, and my condolences to you, Vaughn, and your family. And your mom was amazing, and she not only a supporter of this podcast, but I remember going to watch the Bison games when you've been coaching all these many years, and she was always there, always the faithful supporter. And of course, my brother and I never brought blankets, so she bought me a bay blanket one day, and it just showed up, and I was like, this is just incredible. Who does that? So anyway, I do. She will be missed dearly, and again, wanted to give my condolences. But
I appreciate that, and so let's talk some Jets. And I must say, Mike, as far as the Winnipeg Jets go, there must not be one fan out there that didn't have a better couple of weeks than you. No more Nate Thompson, no more Tucker Poolman, no more Derek Forbort.
It was like Christmas.
The loss of Matty Perreault stings for sure.
It does.
But the transformation of this team on a whole has been rather in line with your wishes. Does this force you to be happy, Mike?
Almost. It almost got me to the point where I was consistently happy for more than several days in a row. But you nailed it. I was like, again, a lot of addition by subtraction and you nailed it, where Tucker Poolman's gone, Forbort's gone. I mean, Paul Maurice is still around, but I'm even more optimistic that and we'll talk about it, I think Chevy's kind of put together a roster where I think this might be sort of a call out to him to say, look, I've gotten you everything you need here. You have a complete roster. Go get your old guys on the fourth line if you'd like, but this is it. Like, we've got it. It's sort of a bit of a now or never. And honestly, this is what I've been preaching for quite some time. I'm a little more reckless, I think, maybe in some of the Jets planning, or how I would see the Jets planning. And they took some shots, and I couldn't be happier. You're right. The Matty Perreault loss to, what did he sign for, like $1 million in Montreal? Like, we couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
I was like, that stung a bit. But all in all, man, again, I've got a big smile on my face, which is rare.
It is, and it all started, we had talked a lot about the expansion draft and leading up to that, and there was, a lot of consternation and anxiety, and I know for me personally, in the days leading up to the expansion draft, I was full of anxiety and self-doubt about what was going to happen. It was kind of just like sex, and just like sex, once it was over, more good things happened than I expected, and I was left confused and somewhat bewildered, and thankful it wasn't going to happen for at least another year.
I almost had to call earmuffs on that one. I'm like, are we doing this? Is this going down this road?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say nothing. Well done, sir. Good analogy.
So somehow we come out of that clean. Like, and we don't even have to give up anything. Like, just to briefly recap, we exposed DeMello. We were worried about that. He was not selected. Mason Appleton was selected, as all Jets fans know by now. And we didn't have to give any compensation to the Kraken to make that happen. Now, losing Mason Appleton was a hit, but, we somehow, I don't know. We talked about rolling the dice. Chevy rolled the dice, and it came up. What's a good 7 boxcars?
Like seven, I think. I was gonna say snake eyes. I'm like, I don't think I play enough dice games. That's a bad one.
Yes, that's things to do in 2022. Play more dice games.
Got to set goals, Vaughn. Got to set goals. But yeah, it was like I read a few pieces where some have attributed it just to basically Chevy playing 3D chess with everyone, yeah. in that there was more interest in Stanley than there was DeMello across the league, and he sort of took an educated guess to say that Stanley might have, at his price range, might have more value than DeMello. And I think your point on our last podcast kind of played out to a certain extent. I think maybe yeah. the Kraken sort of looked at it and go, do we want to pay what will be might be our third line D $3 million a year for 3 years? Again, they made some decisions that were a bit some head scratchers to me. But yeah. At the end of the day, however it played out and however it played out, win-win. Like, you're right, at losing Appleton, that hurts a bit. But to me, that's best case scenario.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what the real outcome of the expansion draft was, and that this podcast is once again a narrative-setting podcast. Okay, it wasn't until our podcast, as you correctly identify, that it got out there that I think Seattle said, hey, they're right. We don't want to pay our third-pairing rate D $3 million a season. That's not the good use of our salary cap. Just like the Kraken awoke and listened. Oh. Okay, and then you know, so Seattle, our invoice is in the mail. You owe us. and then on top of that, okay, there's a rumor out there. Perhaps we started this rumor, but there's a rumor out there that it was our incredible player profile on Mason Appleton in a previous Airport Lounge episode that tipped the balances in his favor. Right? In our segment,
we pumped him up pretty good.
We outlined our research of apples and how there was perhaps more than meets the eye with this guy. I mean, again, we're out there, you know, others are 3D chess. I'll tell you, we're playing an entirely different game. I don't know what game it is, but 4D chess, 10D, I don't know, whatever. Double D, I don't know.
I like the triple dots XL that you're connecting chess. Here. Yeah. The one silly thing is that the very low-hanging fruit, pun intended, of the "do you like apples" meme on Twitter that we like to do every time yeah. Appleton scores is gone. So oh, lazy comedy yeah. loses, which is probably yeah. good for everybody.
You know what? That was one of my favorite ones.
It was. Great too. Movie. I love it. Yeah.
I just loved it. You know, it's one of those things where it made me chuckle every time and everyone else is like, again? Like, can you think of something new? And I'm just like, I loved it every time. So
what works, man.
Yeah. So we're feeling good. We're coming out of the expansion draft. We know we got to lose someone. You know, we get to keep, you know, the Stanley people, the Stanley faction of the Jets fans are happy. The DeMello faction of the Jets fans are happy. We don't give up anything else. So we're feeling pretty good. And, you know, that's, you know, Wednesday, July 21st, that happens.
Yeah.
And then a little while later, we'll talk about the entry draft in a little bit. But then we get this other news. You know, we're just sitting there, and we hear that Paul Stastny gets re-signed.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Paulie Walnuts.
So, and it was in our, you know, just as we get into that, it was in our most recent podcast where we talked about the Jets being at a crossroads, right? We're going to find out whether it was the end of the beginning or beginning of the end. We talked about if it is the end of the beginning and the Jets are going to make a push, we're going to see something happen. And we started to see that unfold on Monday the 26th. And it was really, really exciting. So I am a little bit more of a fan of Paul Stastny than many. Mm-hmm. I do have some concerns with his age and his skating, but I didn't think a 1 year, $3.75 million contract was a bad thing. I love the term. It's a chunk of change, but, yeah. You know, I think there's a few interesting things that happened on this. Number one, he resigned prior to the free agency period starting, right? So he signed on Monday the 26th.
Yeah, he got out of the way. Yeah.
Yeah, free agency wasn't starting until that Wednesday. So, you know, I do think there's a decent statement here that he chose not to explore the market. Now, maybe he, through his agent, he understood there wasn't a strong market for him. And, you know, it wasn't as much about loving Winnipeg as not wanting the indignation of, you know, not, you know, sitting there for 2 weeks and then having to sign for $1 million somewhere. I don't know. But I was quite moved in a positive way about him resigning. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I went through some stages. At first, I was a bit upset because, again, and we still have, and we'll talk about it, we still have folks to sign, right?
Yeah.
And we still have some work that needs to be done. And I, like you, and I think we identified this on earlier podcasts, I noticed a decrease in efficiency and production at the end of the year, and he gets a lot of really prime scoring opportunities that aren't capitalized on. And I had thought moving into free agency, I was like, well, I really like Paulie Walnuts. I think the team likes him. I think the coaching staff likes him.
Yeah.
But I don't want to pay a bunch of money over several years to watch him sort of decline the rest of his career out. And so when it first happened, I was like, man, that seems like a lot for a guy who's probably should be relegated to a third line center. And then I thought, well, a number of things, but the first being is that I like the 1 year.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, right? Is that if we'd signed for 2 years, I think I would have maybe considered it a loss. But because he signed for a year, I think it was I obviously positive. And you know, then the rest of free agency played out, and you see some of the amounts that some of these players are getting paid. And it's like, okay, we didn't do too bad. I mean, is it ideal? Maybe not. But he, you know, the line of Stastny, Kopp, and Ehlers, statistically, and remember they got that hot streak,
yeah,
right? Yeah. Sort of in the first third of the season, they were incredible. Again, Kopp remains to be seen whether or not he'll be with the team, but hopefully, again, might be a bit different because it's going to be a longer season. But at the end of the day, my biggest thing is that he seems to really want to be here, and I think he was a bit instrumental in getting Schmidt here, which he's already paid some dividends, right? I don't know if there's any truth to those rumors. But it sounds like he did talk to Schmidt to say, hey, why don't you waive your no trade because we've got a good thing cooking here. And he seems to really believe in this team and the future of it. So, again, all good things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I did see an interview with Nate Schmidt where he specifically alluded to his phone call with Stastny as a factor. It may not have been – it just helped clarify everything for him. So, you know, I like you, I love the term. The 1 year, it buys another year for Perfetti to develop with the Moose, which I think is a good thing. And I think, as you indicate, this is a fundamentally better situation than, say, a 2 year, $4 million contract. Like, so that's $2 million per year. So that's essentially the same money, but it's a 2 year commitment. I love the 1 year commitment. I can live, like, you're not usually going to get both, right? You're not going to, we weren't going to get Paul Stastny on a 1 year deal for $900,000.
No.
That wasn't going to happen. So we're paying them a little bit more in this season to secure that 1 year deal and then potentially have someone like a Cole Perfetti move in for him. So, and I agree. I had that in my notes, Mike, and him talking to Nate Schmidt and having that effect on that, I think that, and we'll talk more about Nate Schmidt, but you know that it helps us in so many different ways. Number one, his addition, just himself, will be a big plus, and it gives us great leverage in the Pionk situation, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I know. I'm really happy to see Stastny back in a Jets jersey, and I know I made a verbal commitment to you to buy an Ehlers jersey once I'm getting, you know, my next jersey, but now I might be leaning towards a Stastny jersey, and, you know, I know you're a lawyer. What are my legal options here? Do we have a verbally binding contract? Will you release me from that verbally binding contract where, you know, or legally binding contract of the verbal commitment I made to you to buy an Ehlers jersey because this Stastny guy is pretty damn cool.
Sure. There's going to be a settlement. You can use some of that mining money.
Yeah.
I'll take some of that off your hands. But yeah, we'll work something out on the back end. Don't worry.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, it was a decent Monday if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff re-signing Paul Stastny.
Yep.
But he wasn't done.
No.
He wasn't done. Just when we were drinking in the delicious taste of the Stastny re-signing, we were informed of another bold move, the acquisition of Brendan Dillon from the Washington Capitals for 2 second-round picks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, the Jets have been interested in Dillon for some time. As everyone has heard by now, he's got some size and brings some physicality.
Yeah, he's got some sandpaper. Yeah.
He's 6'4", 220. Some people call that big. I call that grade 12.
Oh, you did. That a boy.
So, very quickly, Mike, before I took some, there's some background I found on him from the Capitals fan site called Russian Machine Never Breaks, and I wanted to include it just so I could say Russian Machine Never Breaks.
That is awesome. That's the first thing I'm going to be doing when we're done this podcast is looking that up.
So apparently he spent most of last season skating on the first pair with John Carlson. So he's used to playing with top talent. He may not find that in Winnipeg, but they seemed to think a lot of him in Washington. The reason for the trade was Washington needed the salary cap space.
Yeah, cap space.
They needed to re-sign Ovechkin and Samsonov, and so they needed to clear some of the cap hit. He's got 3 years remaining at $3.9 million, which I like the term. I like that he's going to be around for a little bit, and it's reasonable. He's a physical defender. He's defensively focused. He's not going to be a huge transition guy carrying the puck out of and into out of the defensive zone and into the offensive zone. Lots of things, like he's got great character. He really reduces the other team's offense. This is a guy that I really think plays the type and brand of hockey that Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy want from their defenders. It may not be the type of guy that you or I would ideally pick.
There it is. Team. That's exactly it. Yeah.
But this is, to your earlier point about Kevin Cheveldayoff building a team that Paul Maurice wants, I think this is the perfect acquisition. Mm-hmm. It is a massive upgrade from Derek Forbort. I think in every projection that I've seen online, everyone is putting him beside Pionk, which I think is the perfect spot for him.
Yeah.
So what were your initial thoughts on the Dylan acquisition?
Yeah, quite honestly, I was elated because, this was probably a little simplistic and I'll admit to it, but I was just like, we're making moves. I like that we're making moves. And I saw some consternation online about the two seconds, that's too much. And again, as we'll get into our draft picks, you'll see that all ends up sort of comes out in the wash in terms of if you overpaid or underpaid. Yeah. But, there's probably a bit of confirmation bias on my part, because I have, I think, for consistently throughout this year, been saying that we have a 2 to 3 year window, in my estimation, in terms of Hellebuck, the level of goaltending that you can consistently get. The goalies generally aren't Vezina finalists year after year after year. I think Wheeler, our captain, is obviously coming to the precipice of his talent deterioration. I think we have a smaller window here, and I think Dylan addresses a huge hole. We needed a solid, big defenseman that Maurice is not going to overthink and just be like, this guy needs to play 22 to 25 minutes per game. We'll put him on the first or second point pairing. We're good. Like, you don't get much simpler than that, right? We had a huge hole. Yeah. We filled it with something like a player that I think is a very solid NHL top four defenseman.
Yeah, so that's exciting, right? So we get we get an actual bona fide NHL highly decent player, like a massive upgrade from Derek Forbort, and that was a huge hole in our team last year, like you said. And boom, we're feeling great. Stasny's re-signed. We got DeMello back. Here's Brendan Dillon, this big guy. Oh, we're feeling good. So Chevy's like, I can go to Lake of the Woods now, right? No. Just when you think Chevy's off to Lake of the Woods, there are some things percolating. The Jets aren't going to make a big splash in free agency. Oh, there's this rumor about Nate Schmidt. Oh, of course, he doesn't waive.
I went through that roller coaster. Yeah. I was like, we're not.
Oh, yeah. And then, I imagine, you're like, by God, is that Nate Schmidt's music? Just then, just when we thought, it's kind of like everything was like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we get, the no trade clause. But then Paulie Walnuts picks up the phone and Nate Schmidt is a Winnipeg Jet for a third round pick. What's going on, Mike?
I don't know. It's bizarro world Winnipeg Jets news. I couldn't believe it. I was like, is this actually happening? Did we get two guys in free agency?
Yeah, wow. No kidding. Well, technically it wasn't free agency, right?
Right, very true.
We had to trade for them. So we had two of these three guys we're talking about. You know, Paul Stastny effectively waived his free trade or a free agent opportunity, right? To re-sign with the Jets before going to the open market. That's kind of cool. And here's a guy, you know, he waived his no move clause or no trade clause to come to the Jets, you know, after some prodding. And that's really cool as well. Maybe it's not a home run. Maybe it doesn't change. It's not an indication that, you know, the world is changing in terms of perception of Winnipeg within the NHL. But it was a nice thing. And you know, Schmidt does come with a pretty hefty salary. He makes $6 million a year, and I think he's got several years left on that. But that's a good thing. And like we were talking about before, if we have to trade or re-signing Pionk becomes a serious problem, you know, like this is a guy that he's a top pairing guy. I think this does push DeMello back down to the third pair to play with Stanley. I think Schmidt plays with Morrissey and Dylan plays with Pionk if he can be re-signed. And even if we don't re-sign and have to get rid of Pionk, we have five guys that can play, or four in Stanley. But you know what I mean. This was an exciting move.
Super exciting. And I like reclamation projects to a certain extent, right? Is that he, you know, Schmidt has always been considered sort of a top line D, but obviously had a bit of a nadir in Vancouver and didn't seem very interested in playing there whatsoever. And I'd like these kinds of assets. Guys with talent that have maybe run into some bad luck and some bad situations that we can kind of scoop up at obviously what I think is a very, very good price for him. I love it. And I think, I agree, we'll talk more about what's going to happen with Kopp and Pionk and Stanley signed for 2 years at about a $1 million annual, which is great. But, you know, again, I don't want to kick people on their way out the door, but just replacing Pullman and Forbort with these two guys is basically a dream come true. And I'm sorry, but those guys suck something fierce. And just them not being here would have been pleasant for me. But getting two top four guys in their stead is top notch. Way to go, Chevy.
It's hard not to sound like a fanboy a little bit at this
little bit,
stage.
Yeah.
Like within the very intelligent context you've just put that in, right? Like you take a look at who Forbort and Pullman were, and we replaced them with Dylan and Nate Schmidt. Yes, Nate Schmidt, as you alluded, didn't have a great year last year in Vancouver, but his stats, his analytics are very good from when he was in Washington, and they're very good from when he was in Vegas. He had one down year. So he's going to come in, not necessarily with a chip on his shoulder. I've been reading he's changed his off-season workout regimen. He's doing different things so that he's faster and more explosive and quicker. All stuff I like. And you know, I have to admit, you know, back to Stastny, that call was critical, but I'm just wondering, you know, perhaps part of, you know, what brought him to Winnipeg was the desire to play with future Canadian Olympian Mark Scheifele as well. Who would not want to play with an Olympian? Because Mark Scheifele is going to be on that team.
Well, probably the guy he hospitalized.
Yeah, fair enough. No, you know, omelets, man. Got to break an egg every once in a while.
Oh, dude.
Is that too soon?
Too soon. But yeah, I think that, again, we've come across this a bunch of times, right, where people say, no thanks, I don't want to go to Winnipeg. I think Paulie Walnuts helped. And I think he just wanted out of Vancouver, to be honest. And I think I think you're right to a certain extent. Like, I think he would look at the talent we have on the forward core. I think that we would look that we have a Vezina goaltender, and that he would look like that we're, you know, that we're beefing up the D line. There's not a lot of holes in our lineup. Again, this is a kiss of death for me right now. Now we're going to finish dead last this year. But it's just, again, I can't help but be optimistic because we filled holes. You know, we're the backup goalie. We're gonna. I'm not super sold on Comrie, and we've got a little work to do on the back end of our forward core. But all in all, I'm sure he like all hockey players can assess talent fairly well, and I think he probably looked at us and went like, "Yeah, man, I'll give this a go." They seem to be on a team on the up, perhaps.
Absolutely, and I do think that you know, we did go reasonably deep in the playoffs. The reason we kind of didn't move further was clear. We needed help on the back end. I think that it would have been more difficult to get Schmidt to waive his no trade clause if we hadn't already acquired Brendan Dillon. So now he's smart enough to go, okay, they have a couple good guys. They got this other good guy. I think I'm pretty good. Suddenly that defensive core is looking fundamentally different. Yeah. And we can't discount the fact that, you know, Vancouver is a bit of a tire fire. They're like, whatever you think of the Jets, you know, as a team, you look at there's uncertainty and you know, perhaps a lack of direction it's not clear what direction the Canucks are going in at this stage. Are they getting younger? Are they making a push for it?
Who knows?
I think it's very clear that the Jets are in now mode, as we've discussed. And this is a guy that, you know, he's not in the tail end of his career. He's in the meat of his career. And he's like, you know, I don't have 10 years ahead of me. Maybe he's got 6. Maybe he's got 4, right? So he's not interested in a rebuild. Well, the Jets aren't rebuilding. They're in now mode. So that can be attractive. Just the certainty of playing with a good group of guys that, you know, your good friend has vouched for on a team that you can be part of the reason why they can push even deeper into the playoffs than they did last year. Whereas, you know, are the Canucks even a playoff team this year? Like, I'm not sure. It's just exciting. It's really, you know, there's a few question marks, and maybe we can go on and chat about that with Pionk and Kopp. But, you know, if we can get those two things worked out, I agree there's not a lot of holes in the Jets lineup. So,
I agree. It is. And you know, I think Brian Little, I don't know if it's been formally announced, but he'll probably get moved to long-term injured reserve. Yeah. And so that frees up his $5.3 million salary. So we end up with Stanley signed. We've got about...
I think it's around 11 million.
With Stanley, the million comes off.
Oh, right. It was, yeah, you're right. Good call. It was around 11 prior to re-signing Stanley. So it's it's in the neighborhood of 10 million to sign Pionk and Kopp. And that, it just to the last, maybe the last point or word on Schmidt, he does, as I think we mentioned, he comes with a $6 million a year tag.
Yeah.
And that was my only tiny concern. I mean, part of that's why we only had to give up a third round pick for him, because he's got so much, he takes up a chunk of cap space, and bringing him on board squeezes our ability to re-sign Pionk and Kopp, both of them. Certainly we have enough space to re-sign one of them, but getting them both under will be interesting. But I think it was a move worth making, because even if we have to move Pionk, I mean, we have guys in our system that can be decent, and we're going to get something in return. So, you know, and we have good players. So, it was absolutely a move worth making. And what are your thoughts on Pionk? He's filed to go to arbitration.
Yeah, both.
Okay, both of them have filed. They're both in somewhat different situations. And I did some research, and I wasn't able to precisely identify why it's different for both of them. So for Pionk, his arbitration date is August 13th, which is relatively soon, and so an arbitrator will come in, and I'll turn it over to you in a second. You're the lawyer. An arbitrator will come in, and each side gets to make their case, and the arbitrator will say his salary should be this, and the Jets can choose a one-year deal or a two-year deal. They don't have that with Kopp. Kopp will only be a one-year deal.
Yes, yeah.
We're likely going to have Pionk unless an arbitrator... and that's the other thing. Sorry, I don't mean to jump around too much. The market for defenders has gone insane.
Yeah, it's gone a little wacky. So
that's going to push up, you know, if you just take a look at what the market is saying about defenders, I thought it was crazy to think that Pionk would be worth $6 million a year. Now I think that's the market is clearly spoken. He's maybe a minimum. Like, if Darnell Nurse gets $9.25 million a year, why shouldn't Pionk's agent ask for the same thing?
Yeah, and you know, you can even go within your own organization, right? You can look at Morrissey and go, last year I was a, you know, I'm sure that's what his agents are going to be saying. Yeah. Pionk was better than Morrissey. Morrissey makes six plus. Yeah. My client should at least start there. And obviously the Jets organization are going to say yes, but, you know, traditionally Morrissey has been a consistent, you know, all the counter arguments to that. But I think that would be the agent's starting point. And, if you sort of broken this down, or if I tried to break this down maybe months ago, I would have never thought, same as you, I was like, I would have thought maybe in the 4 to 5 range, but I would be surprised if he gets less than 6 at the end of the day with this. Yeah. Who knows? Again, stranger things have happened. But I think that's part of the problem, right, is that Kopp is also looking around saying, you know, just the simple numbers of goals that he scored in the games, you know, sort of in the shortened season. I think he too is looking around saying, well, I should be getting $5 million. And yeah. I'm quite honestly, I'm torn. Like, I see your point is a valid one, right? Where if before all the trades, we did talked about it, that he was an absolute must sign. Mm-hmm. He's a little more expendable now. But I really like our decor with him in there, yeah. One of the lineups that you set out, which I think would be perfect. And Kopp is a guy that I fluctuate on. Sometimes I think he's extremely valuable, and sometimes I think he can disappear to a certain extent and is rightfully relegated to the third line duties. And is, you know, I keep saying that I can't lose so many third line guys and just say, oh, they're easy, like Appleton, Kopp. You can only lose so many of those guys in the guts of your forward core and still be half decent. And yeah. So I quite honestly, I'm torn. I'm leaning to keep Pionk because maybe it's PSD because PTSD? Yeah, that's it. Where
PLD?
PLD? No, it's not PLD.
PSD?
He better be working out.
Do you like his new number?
I do like his new number. I do like his new number, and I do like... You sent me a little snippet about him not being old enough to get into a bar, and I made some tattoo jokes. It's all good times.
Yeah.
And so... But again, at the end of the day, I think that I don't want to go through that again where our defense is just basically the worst. Yeah. And I, you know, it's amazing how an effective D can mobilize forwards and just changes your whole outlook of a team. So that would I be leaning now. Again, I'm not going to be disappointed. I'd like to keep them both, but that obviously might not be a thing. So I'll, you know, I'm prepared to accept whatever the inevitability is of this.
Yeah, this is one where it has, like, I'm elated generally. But this one has me worried a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I do think this is one where you're going to get paralysis by overanalysis. I do think you can sit down and say, listen, if we don't re-sign Pionk, then, you know, DeMello can play with Morrissey, Schmidt can play with Dylan, and then we have, you know, I think the consensus is Logan Stanley is going to be, you know, anchored on that third pair. Yeah. And then we can put Ville Heinola there, or we can put Dylan Sandberg there, or Sami Niku there. So they have more in-house options for that. And they might also ask, how is it appropriate to allocate this much of our cap to our defense? Because then you're going to have, you know, Morrissey making 6+, DeMello's making 3, mm-hmm. Dylan's making 3.9, so basically 4, you know, Schmidt's making 6. And, you know, probably at this stage, we'd be lucky to get Pionk for 7, only because the market has gone crazy. Is that too much to be paying your best 5 defenders? I think it's an open question. It's a tough one. And do you feel that Kopp is more difficult to replace from within your organization? Because that's the thing. I think that there are more internal solutions to losing Pionk than to losing Kopp. Although I would love to see the Jets with those 6 defenders for a number of years. You know what I mean?
Me too. That's my thing, right? Long term, it's like, man, that's a very solid decor. But totally get it that I agree that I think probably it's easier to manufacture a lineup on the D side without Pionk than if we lose Kopp. Because, again, we're going to have to expect a lot from some of the guys who've been in and out of the lineup. And it just worries me that now we're going to have a whole new slew of Nate Thompsons. And we already signed Riley Nash, which I actually think was a good signing.
Yeah.
But it was something where, I think I agree with you that Kopp is probably the person to keep, but I'm torn, man.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, and maybe this is a good time to transition to the entry draft, because I do think that in terms of taking a look at what we have in the pipeline up front, Jets made some really exciting picks in the entry draft. And so shall we transition to the entry draft? Or last comments on
sure. No, that's great. That's a perfect transition. And we'll I've dubbed this the Dimitri draft, because we picked four players and two of them were named Dimitri but spelt differently. I was like, man, oh man, and we had Dimitri Kulikov. We'd like our Dimitris here in the Jets, but I'll turn it over to you in terms of. Because, you know, I think our first and second picks were the most, to my mind, the most exciting. I think the other two, the Dimitris, are a little more speculative. But what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think the Jets took a flyer on a couple players that are either going to, you know, really work. They were gambles, right? So good on them for taking a shot now. The guy we picked in the first round, his name's Chaz Lucius. Yes. With the 17th pick, even though we were picking at 18, it was the 17th pick because Arizona lost their had to forfeit their pick. So, So this is a kid. First of all, you know the kid is a winner with a name like Chaz Lucius.
You can't go wrong with Chaz Lucius. It's an awesome name.
No one boring has ever been named Chaz Lucius. No. So either this kid is going to be a winner, or he's going to be a guy selling moonshine from a van down by the river.
Right? Either way, so I'm all in.
Either way, I'm all in. So for me, he's a high-end finisher goal scorer. So that says the Jets love... For me, I'm going to make this about Patrick Laine.
I knew it. I knew it. I had it written down. I was like, Vaughn / Line A question mark. There it is. I could tick that one off.
Yeah. So, So I'll give you a quick overview of who this kid looks to be. I've only watched some videos out there. I don't purport to be an expert, but many of his video highlights were goals scored in the paint. In fact, I found a stat where 86% of all his shot attempts were from the slot. He looks and moves a lot like Shifley, but plays more stylistically like a Kyle Connor or a Patrick Laine. He's a sniper. He's a goal scorer. Yeah. I didn't see a lot of assists on his highlight films.
Just
a lot of finishing. Efforts, the pucks that ended up in the back of the net. He plays center for the U.S. National Development Program, but he projects into the NHL as a right winger. There's some concerns about his skating and defensive play. Again, building the case to be a very Liney-like player. We were somewhat fortunate that he fell to us. He had knee surgery in his draft year, which caused him to miss a bunch of games, but... he returned in February and scored 13 goals in 13 games, which
is quite incredible.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Do you want to jump in? What were your first impressions? And then I'll get into my Line A bit in a second.
Yeah, I was excited. I like the upside, right? And again, the skating part of it worries you a bit, and that the method through which getting some of the goals, like close to the net, you're playing with bigger, stronger, faster players. You might not always have those same opportunities when you're playing against lesser competition, but again, all in all, I was excited. I wrote this in a piece for our new partners that do I trademark Charles in Charge now for his nickname, or do I have to wait and let it grow organically? Because I'm going to try and make that nickname happen.
Charles in Charge?
Charles, because Chaz is Charles. Charles in Charge.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm planting the seeds now. Just hang on.
Chaz in charge.
Chaz in charge. We'll go with that. It's even better. Because right. You don't want to lose Chaz. It's just an awesome name.
It is an awesome name. You know, the more I read and watched and listened to others describe Chaz, the more it sounded like what this guy does is exactly what Patrick Laine brought to the table. And that's the ability to find that sweet spot on the ice and able to rifle the puck into the back of the net if you can get it to him on his back foot.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a striking difference between the two. You know, Lucius seems a lot more serious isn't the right word. It's not the wrong word, but focused than, you know, the Laine, the laissez-faire Laine. You know, a lot about what I read was he has a very positive personality. His teammates allude to his leadership abilities. I've seen him described as mature beyond his years.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, and you know, it's somewhat propaganda when you read it, but you know, people were noting that when he was recovering from knee surgery, he was reading books on leadership, he was reading books on self-improvement. So this is a very different personality than Patrick Laine. He's got the skill set, or very similar to Patrick Laine, but it was a very different person than Patrick Laine. So for me, the organization said, we recognize what we gave up when we traded Patrick Laine. And it was never, for me, it just confirmed that it was never about the on ice. For me, it started to clarify and crystallize that it was perceived as a non-fit off the ice, right? And yeah, so little of time is spent on the ice, and it's all that what we see. So we can attach a huge importance and maybe an over-importance to the chemistry on the ice. But if it's not working and creating discord amongst the group off the ice, like this is a guy that's going to come in and fit in. I mean, he had, before the Jets had selected him, he had pre-identified Mark Scheifele as a guy he wanted to model his game after. So, you know, he could choose anyone.
Oh, you must love Chaz.
Oh, yes. I am. Stasny, you're out. Chaz Lucius, New Jersey. So, you know, it was very telling to me. And I'm very excited because I do think that, you know, as good as the Jets forward core is, you know, Laine brought excitement every night. And every time he stepped on the ice, you thought something great could happen for the Jets. Mm-hmm. Something bad might happen as well, but yeah, miss that. And I'm hoping, I mean, it is a lot to ask of the kid to be the next Patrick Laine, but he certainly, carries those skill sets, and I'm excited to see what he can do in a Jets jersey.
I do too. And I was on bated breath there. I thought you were about to just make a really bold call and be like, this guy's going to be better than Patrick Laine. But I'm glad that you pulled short of that. But I'm excited as well, and I think you're 100% right. I think that, you know, obviously I miss Laine, and he was an exceptional goal scorer with an exceptional shot, which is sort of unmatched with anybody else in the NHL. But even I, you know, by the end of it there, I was like, this guy doesn't get along with a lot of folks, and he's not wired the same way as everyone else in the dressing room. And I think it was frustrating mainly for the Wheelers and the Scheifeles and the Morrisseys, is that there was a time and commitment that goes to being a professional hockey player, and I'm not sure Patrick Laine has reached the maturity levels that are probably necessary for him to be like, okay, I really do have to sort of dedicate myself full time to this. I'm a generational talent, but that only gets you so far. Anyway, I don't want to slander him on the way out. He's already out the door. But again, I'm excited. What about our other pick, Nikita?
Nikita Chibrikov. We got him 50th overall.
Yeah.
A Russian guy, a little bit smaller in stature, 5'10", 170. Had a very good U18 tournament. 4 goals, 13 points, 14 penalty minutes, leading his team to the silver medal. One of the reasons this guy fell a little bit, he was ranked 24 by Bob McKenzie, 26 by McKean's, 26 by Craig Button, 21 by Sportsnet. So he falls to Jets at the 50 spot. So why does that happen? Well, he's under contract with St. Petersburg of the KHL till 22-23. So that's been sort of pointed to as to why he fell, because we don't the team will have no control or ability to bring him over. I won't say no, but very little. His contract status does not give the flexibility required that some teams would want to bring him over, play him with the Moose, play him with the big team, whatever. He's been called a classic Russian forward, fast with skill and good hockey sense. So, you know, yeah, I think before I move on, I want to reiterate, he plays for St. Petersburg, which was formerly known as what? Leningrad. Can we call him, if you get to choose Chaz's nickname?
I'm all in for this.
I want to call Nikita the Leningrad Cowboy. Have you ever seen that movie, The Leningrad Cowboys?
I have not, and I immediately will, because that sounds, I don't care if it's about knitting. That's a fantastic title. And
well, I'll give you a snapshot. It's a Russian movie, and it's a bunch of these guys play punk rock, and they all have pompadour hairdos, and they drive around frozen Russia playing rock and roll. And it's the typical, you know, the car breaks down and all this crazy stuff happens. And it is like, I remember watching it years ago and just being like awestruck at how crazy this movie is and how crazy their pompadours are. But check it out, Leningrad
so
Cowboys.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm so checking that out.
Yeah.
And, so, and on the nickname, absolutely. Let's make that happen too.
The Leningrad Cowboy.
Yeah.
Nikita Chibrikov, the Leningrad Cowboy. So the Jets, you know, they take a flyer at some forwards, some skill forwards. They're looking to restock there. They've got some good guys within the system in the back end. So they could really go either way with Pionk or Kopp. Now, they're probably going to have both of those guys, providing their arbitrator rulings allow them to fit under the cap. I don't know if they both get awarded a whole chunk of cash that means the Jets are over the cap, what has to happen? But
it's not clear to me either. It's something I was looking at this morning, and I was like, what does happen? And I couldn't really discern the exact process through which we do get under the cap, or we have to release somebody, or what, how that all works out.
But I like seeing the Jets start to restock the cupboard on the forward end. So, you know, even if we lose, if we have to move Kopp or we lose him, you know, we have some guys or more guys in the pipeline that can come up. Now, they're different types of players, mm-hmm. right? They're more offensively skilled than, they're not a direct replacement for Kopp. That's not where I'm going. But I do think you draft talent. And then if we have a surplus of offensively skilled people and we need a third line guy, we can trade or
and move somebody,
move someone. So I do think that we find the Jets in, you know, this position where they've made some excellent moves and now they have some flexibility. I would lean to get, despite the internal assets that they have to potentially bolster the defensive core if Pionk were to be moved because he was too much money, I love the idea of keeping Pionk and replacing Kopp. I love that. But if they go the reverse, you know, we have, you know, it's good. The big team roster looks good. You know, the prospect roster looks pretty good.
We're going to be back in games live. It's all coming up Millhouse over here. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, my financial plan took a bit of a hit. I'll tell you, I wasn't projecting those payments coming out of the bank account.
Kind of stuck up on us, dude.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, that hurt a little bit. But but yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to games and seeing this team on the ice. I think there'll be a lot of excitement for a lot of reasons, all of them good. Except, Mark Scheifele's still suspended.
Right, I forgot about that. Yeah. That's a bit of a bummer. But I share your excitement and enthusiasm, and I think we'll be back here obviously before the season starts with some breakdowns and further analysis and good and bad and I'm very excited for the season.
Yeah, so am I. I think the next time we're on, we'll obviously have clarity on what's happened with Pionk and Kopp, mm-hmm. You know, and the ramifications there. We'll project. I think there's some pretty decent statistical projections as to where the Jets will fall. They'll be in a new division playing against different teams. So we'll take a look at that. But yeah, it's been, in terms of the Jets, it's been a fun couple of weeks, and nothing but optimism for me, Mike.
Hear, hear. I like it.
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at AirportLounge55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to come back next time to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.
Cheers.